Whoever roused his jealousy incurred his moral disapproval. He was energetic in the support and administration of all laws against dress, against the personal adornment of women, against entertainments and free discussion. He was so fortunate as to be made censor, which gave him great power over the private lives of public people. He was thus able to ruin public opponents through private scandals. He expelled Manlius from the Senate for giving his wife a kiss in the daytime in the sight of their daughter. He persecuted Greek literature, about which, until late in life, he was totally ignorant. Then he read and admired Demosthenes. He wrote in Latin upon agriculture and the ancient and lost virtues of Rome. From these writings much light is thrown upon his qualities. One of his maxims was that when a slave was not sleeping, he should be working. Another was that old oxen and slaves should be sold off. He left the war horse that had carried him through his Spanish campaigns behind him when he returned to Italy in order to save freight. He hated other people's gardens and cut off the supply of water for garden use in Rome. After entertaining company, when dinner was over, he'd go out to correct any negligence in the service with a leather thong. He admired his own virtues very greatly and insisted upon them in his writings. There was a battle at Thermopylae against Antiochus the Great, of which he wrote, "Those who saw him charging the enemy, routing and pursuing them, declared that Cato owed less to the people of Rome than the people of Rome owed to Cato." In his old age, Cato became lascivious and misconducted himself with a woman slave. Finally, when his son protested against this disorder of their joint household, he married a young wife, the daughter of his secretary, who was not in a position to refuse his offer. What became of the woman slave isn't told. Probably he sold her. This compendium of all the old Roman virtues died at an advanced age, respected and feared. Almost his last public act was to urge on the Third Punic War and the final destruction of Carthage. He'd gone to Carthage as a commissioner to settle certain differences between Carthage and Numidia, and he'd been shocked and horrified to find some evidences of prosperity and even of happiness in that country. From the time of that visit onward, Cato concluded every speech he made in the Senate by croaking out, "Delenda est Carthago," Carthage must be destroyed. Such was the type of man that rose to prominence in Rome during the Punic struggle. Such was the protagonist of Hannibal and the Carthaginian Ravage, and by him and by Hannibal we may judge the tone and quality of the age. The two great Western powers, and Rome perhaps more than Carthage, were strained mentally and morally by the stresses of the First War. The evil side of life was uppermost. The history of the Second and Third Punic Wars, 219-201, and 149-146 BC, it's plain, isn't the history of perfectly sane peoples. It's nonsense for historians to write of the political instincts of the Romans or Carthaginians. Quite other instincts were loose. The red eyes of the ancestral ape had come back into the world. It was a time when reasonable men were howled down or murdered. The true spirit of the age is shown in the eager examination for signs and portents of the still quivering livers of those human victims who were sacrificed in Rome during the panic before the Battle of Telamon. The Western world was indeed black with homicidal monomania. Two great peoples, both very necessary to the world's development, fell foul of one another, and at last Rome succeeded in murdering Carthage. Sixth. We can only tell very briefly here of the particulars of the Second and Third Punic Wars. We've told how Hamilcar began to organize Spain, and how the Romans forbade him to cross the Ebro. He died in 228 BC, and was followed by his son-in-law Hasdrubal, who was assassinated in 221 BC, and succeeded by Hannibal, who was now 26. The actual war was precipitated by the Romans making a breach of their own regulations and interfering with affairs south of the Ebro, whereupon Hannibal marched straight through the south of Gaul and crossed the Alps in 218 BC into Italy. The history of the next 15 years is the story of the most brilliant and futile raid in history. For 15 years Hannibal held out in Italy, victorious and unconquered. The Roman generals were no match for the Carthaginian, and whenever they met him, they were beaten. But one Roman general, Publius Cornelius Scipio, had the strategic sense to take a course that robbed all Hannibal's victories of fruit. At the outbreak of the war, he'd been sent by sea to Marseille to intercept Hannibal. He arrived 3 days late, and instead of pursuing him, he sent on his army into Spain to cut up Hannibal's supplies and reinforcements. Throughout all the subsequent war, there remained this Roman army of Spain between Hannibal and his base. He was left in the air, incapable of conducting sieges or establishing conquests. Whenever he met the Romans in open fight, he beat them. He gained 2 great victories in North Italy and won over the Gauls to his side. He pressed south into Etruria, and ambushed, surrounded, and completely destroyed a Roman army at Lake Trasimene. In 216 BC, he was assailed by a vastly superior Roman force under Varro at Cannae, and destroyed it utterly. 50,000 men are said to have been killed, and 10,000 prisoners taken. He was, however, unable to push on and capture Rome, because he had no siege equipment. But Cannae produced other fruits. A large part of southern Italy came over to Hannibal, including Capua, the city next in size to Rome, and the Macedonians allied themselves with him. Moreover, Hiero of Syracuse, the faithful ally of Rome, was now dead, and his successor, Hieronymus, turned over to the Carthaginian. The Romans carried on the war, however, with great toughness and resolution. They refused to treat with Hannibal after Cannae. They pressed a slow but finally successful blockade and siege of Capua, and a Roman army set itself to reduce Syracuse. The siege of Syracuse is chiefly memorable for the brilliant inventions of the philosopher Archimedes, which long held the Romans at bay. We've already named this Archimedes as one of the pupils and correspondents of the School of the Alexandrian Museum. He was killed in the final storm of the town. Tarentum, 209 BC, Hannibal's chief port and means of supply from Carthage, at last followed Syracuse in 212 BC and Capua in 211 BC, and his communications became irregular. Spain also was wrested bit by bit from the Carthaginian grip, when at last reinforcements for Hannibal under his brother Hasdrubal, not to be confused with his brother-in-law of the same name who was assassinated, struggled through into Italy. They were destroyed at the Battle of the Metaurus, 207 BC, and the first news that came to Hannibal of the disaster was the hacked-off head of his brother, thrown into his camp. Thereafter, Hannibal was blockaded into Calabria, the heel of Italy. He had no forces for further operations of any magnitude, and he returned at last to Carthage in time to command the Carthaginians in the last battle of the war. This last battle, the Battle of Zama, 202 BC, was fought close to Carthage. It was the first defeat Hannibal experienced, and so it's well to give a little attention to the personality of his conqueror, Scipio Africanus the Elder, who stands out in history as a very fine gentleman indeed, a great soldier and a generous man. We've already mentioned a certain Publius Cornelius Scipio, who struck at Hannibal's base in Spain. This was his son. Until after Zama, this son bore the same name of Publius Cornelius Scipio, and then the surname of Africanus was given him. The younger Scipio Africanus, Scipio Africanus Minor, who was later to end the Third Punic War, was the adopted son of this first Scipio Africanus the Elder. Scipio Africanus was everything that aroused the distrust, hatred, and opposition of old-fashioned Romans of the school of Cato. He was young, he was happy and able, He spent money freely, he was well versed in Greek literature, and inclined rather to Phrygian novelties in religion than to the sterner divinities of Rome. And he didn't believe in the extreme discretion that then ruled Roman strategy. After the early defeats of the Second Punic War, Roman military operations were dominated by the personality of a general, Fabius, who raised the necessity of avoiding battle with Hannibal into a kind of sacred principle. For 10 years, Fabian tactics prevailed in Italy. The Romans blockaded, cut up convoys, attacked stragglers, and ran away whenever Hannibal appeared. No doubt it was wise for a time after their first defeats to do this sort of thing, but the business of the stronger power, and Rome was the stronger power throughout the Second Punic War, isn't to tolerate an interminable war, but to repair losses, discover able generals, train better armies, and destroy the enemy power. Decision is one of the duties of strength.